Welcome to the Systemair third quarter 2012 financial results call on the 21st of November 2012. Throughout today's recorded presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulty hearing the presentation, please press the star followed by the zero on your telephone for operator assistance. Before we start, we would like to draw your attention to the fact that some of the information during this call contains projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or the future financial performance of Systemair. You can identify forward-looking statements by terms such as expert, believe, anticipate, estimate, intend, will, could, may, or might, the negative of such terms or similar expressions. We wish to caution you that these statements are only predictions and that actual events or results may differ materially. We do not intend to update these statements to reflect events and circumstances occurring after today's date or to reflect the occurrence of unanticipated events. Many factors could cause the actual results to differ materially from those contained in our projections or forward-looking statements, including, among others, deteriorating economic and credit conditions, our competitive environment, risks associated with operating in Russia, rapid technological and market change in our industries, as well as many other risks specifically related to Systemair and its operations. I want to hand the conference over to Mr. Yevgeny Chekhov. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for dialing in. We're now ready to start this conference call to discuss our third quarter 2012 results. With us on the line today, we have Mikhail Shamolin, our President and Chief Executive Officer, Alexei Buyanov, Senior Vice President and CFO, and myself, Yevgeny Chukov, Head of Investor Relations. You can find a presentation of today's results on our website at systemair.com, and I will now turn the call over to Mikhail for his comments.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us to discuss Systemair's third quarter 2012 results. Systemair has reported strong results today, driven by excellent performance across all of our investments. Our revenues increased to $8.8 billion and expanded 11% in ruble terms, and we saw double-digit growth in OIBDA and net income, which increased 10.4% to $2.4 billion and 105% to $653 million, respectively. Importantly, on the corporate level, we have doubled our cash position year-on-year, which now amounts to $1.7 billion and resulted in net cash of $152 million in the third quarter. There are several factors which have contributed to these strong results. Key drivers were our existing investments in the telecom and oil sectors. Both MTS and Bashneft have once again delivered exceptional growth and underlined their best-in-class credentials. MTS demonstrated strong margins of 44% and delivered 5.1% year-on-year OIBDA growth in ruble terms. Competitive trends are improving, and we welcome MTS's confidence in delivering higher returns to shareholders in the near and medium term. In oil and gas, Bashneft reported excellent revenue and OIBDA growth as the company benefited from higher oil prices and increased sales of oil products on the domestic market. Production increased by 1.8% quarter-on-quarter, and the company remains on track to substantially ramp up production as it delivers first oil from Treps Titov at the end of 2013. We are also pleased to report success across other parts of the portfolio, where a number of businesses have substantially increased in scale. Detский мир, for instance, expanded their retail space by 23.5% year-on-year, which resulted in 11% increase in revenues to $231 million and a much improved OIBDA of $20 million. The company aims to maintain this momentum and report profit by the end of this year. Similarly, RTI acquisition of Envision boosted the company's earnings by 27% quarter-on-quarter, even though the consolidation took place only in the last 2 weeks of the period. Envision's contribution to RTI top line was 18% in third quarter and is set to grow further. Dynapharm, too, continued to build on previous quarters, reporting a substantial increase in OIBDA year-on-year as the company increased vaccine supplies under government programs. In recent weeks, we also had important developments taking place at SSTL. The company elected not to participate in the license auctions at a prohibitively high reserve price and continues to focus on a curative petition in the Supreme Court of India. Importantly, SSTL OIBDA loss narrowed in third quarter, and we began lowering SSTL's debt, which by the end of the year is expected to be less than $1 billion. The less expensive debt with single-digit increased interest rates will remain on SSTL pending further developments. We are closely monitoring the situation but have no specific consolidation plans. Turning to our portfolio strategy, we have announced several proposed acquisitions which we believe which will bring substantial diversification and value to Sistema. One of our foremost objectives is to assemble a group of investments which can give greater balance to the group's NAV and deliver long-term growth potential. As a result, in October, we participated in the state privatization of SG Trans, the largest LPG carrier in Russia. The acquisition is not complete and is pending government approval, which we hope to receive shortly. The acquisition is attractive on many levels, including consistently growing sector, which in 2010 and 11 expanded 8% and 6% respectively, high margins, which average over 40%, and synergies with our existing transportation exposure. If completed, the SG Trans acquisition will boost our presence to approximately 32,000 rail cars, which we plan to grow together with an experienced industry partner. The second, the sector overall is one of the last remaining frontiers in terms of privatization and consolidation opportunities, and we will discuss our strategy in greater detail once government approval is received. Similarly, we announced the proposed acquisition of Argus, one of the largest European oil traders. The term sheet we signed is non-binding, and the transaction details are yet to be fully agreed. However, in line with our strategy, the proposed acquisition will allow Sistema to capture the full value chain in our oil and gas investments and is envisaged as a standalone business within our portfolio. Argus offers excellent distribution and logistic platform for Bashneft's oil products, allowing significant value from trading activity to remain within the group. Subject to due diligence, further details of the transaction will be announced in Q1 2013. Two other deals which we announced post-period and are the completion of Bashkir Energy restructuring and MTS's participation in MTS Bank. The former is an example of Sistema's growing track record in successfully exiting investments. We have secured 11.2 billion rubles for the power generation unit in cash and promissory notes, and were able to retain upside in the transmission sector. Overall, this takes Sistema's disposals tallied to $840 million over the course of the last 2 years and is a strong sign of our ability to monetize value. In October, we signed a non-binding offer with MTS and MTS Bank, allowing MTS to take up to 25% stake in MTS Bank by the way of an additional share issuance. The transaction is beneficial to both parties as they aim to tap into a growing consumer finance market. We continue to screen numerous opportunities and have several projects under advanced review. These include investments in consumer, transportation, agriculture, and pharmaceutical sectors. In the latter, we are currently assessing one opportunity which would complement Dynapharm and position Sistema as one of the leaders in a sector which is predicted to expand at a combined average growth rate of 13% over the next few years. As mentioned at the start of the call, we are well-financed to execute these deals with sufficient cash and leverage capacity at the holding level. We have also numerous tools at our disposal, including bond and equity markets, should it be required. The latter will depend on our M&A plans and is simply a flexibility option. Finally, as you can see in our presentation materials, we have made new appointments and reshaped our internal structure into 8 portfolios, each led by an experienced investment manager. The new structure is aimed at configuring Sistema to a private equity approach with portfolios based on deal organization and industry experience. As we look ahead to 2013, we believe we are on track to deliver a more balanced and diversified portfolio of investments. Our acquisitions will bring a step change transformation to existing assets and add new large-scale businesses to the group. We believe this in turn will generate greater cash flow to the holding level and create opportunity to substantially increase return to shareholders. With clear strategies, solid execution, and numerous tools at our disposal, we are confident that our discount to the sum of the parts will diminish and our share price will reflect the value we are creating. I will now turn the call over to Alexey Buyanov, who will discuss our financials in more detail. Alexey, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mikhail. Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As reported, the third quarter financial results were driven by strong fundamental growth across the group, as well as a strong performance in MTS and Bashneft. We have seen better results in other assets such as Binafarm and Deskimir, both of which showed solid organic growth and accelerating OIBDA growth quarter on quarter, and RTI, which benefited from Envision consolidation. One significant factor influencing the group's financial results is the continuing uncertainty surrounding our Indian telecom business. Based on the recent developments in India, the group performed an impairment test of the long-lived assets of SSTL and recognized a $213 million impairment loss in group's operating income and corresponding $121 million loss in the group's net income. Currency fluctuations during the reporting period impacted the group's results in both positive and negative ways. While the closing exchange rate from dollar into ruble decreased by 5.8% quarter-on-quarter, the average rate went in opposite direction and increased by 3.2%. As a result of these currency movements, the group's revenues in ruble terms grew faster than in dollar terms. Together with 9% growth in group's revenues, net cash provided by operations in the third quarter of 2012 grew by 8% quarter-on-quarter to $1.8 billion. At the end of the reporting period, our cash position at the corporate central level was $1.7 billion, including highly liquid deposits. Dividend flow from our investment totaled $866 million. Simultaneously, we had a cash outflow on several items, including $250 million ruble bond buyback, $90 million spent on the share buyback program, $82 million dividend payment, approximately $90 million spent on increasing the group's stake in Mosdashian and Agra Holding, and approximately $100 million loan to FTI for the acquisition of Envision. The remaining amount has been invested in financial instruments. Our capital expenditures stayed at almost the same level quarter on quarter and decreased by 9.7% year-on-year, mostly due to the overall cost-cutting in SSTL. Importantly, Rosneft also announced new conditions of loan agreement with Sberbank, one of the main creditors of the holding. The new agreement contemplates the creditor's interest rate reducing to 7% per annum. Rosneft plans to decrease its debt to approximately $4.6 billion by year-end. Turning to our debt position, in the third quarter, total debt amounted to $16.2 billion, as a 3.1% quarter-on-quarter increase, mainly due to the ruble appreciation and the consolidation of Envision. In ruble terms, our consolidated debt decreased by 3.2%, and the group's debt to OIBDA ratio stood at a very comfortable level of 1.8. Again, the group's debt currency profile demonstrates limited currency exposure, with its share of Russian ruble-denominated loans amounting to 71% of the total debt at the group level and 65% at the corporate holding level. There are no debt obligations denominated in euros at the corporate holding level. The total debt at the corporate holding level decreased by 6.1% quarter-on-quarter, amounting to $1.5 billion, reflecting the debt repayment made in the reporting period. We also reported a net cash position at the corporate holding level in the third quarter, which totaled $150 million. As noted by Mikhail, we have also commenced lowering some of SSTL debt and plan to reduce it below $1 billion by the end of the year. This will significantly lower financing costs to single digits. The remaining debt will stay with SSTL subject to further license developments. You can see the group's financial results as well as by individual company in more details in the presentation and press release published on our website. And with this, I would like to thank you for your attention and hand the call over to Evgeny.
Thank you, Alexey. We're now ready to take questions.
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. There'll be a short pause whilst participants register for a question. Thank you. Your first question comes from Alexei Gogolev. Please state your company, followed by your question.
Good afternoon. This is Alexei Gogolev from JP Morgan. I was wondering what was the reasoning behind the recent purchase of Bashnet shares? As I understand, the free float of common shares has reduced to just below 11%. So I was wondering why you've acquired shares from the market and not from, for example, Sistema Invest.
The transaction was made as a result of the transition of Bashnet to one share, and consolidation they have had during this process. Sistema lost its direct ownership below 50%, and just to maintain it back, we made some acquisitions from Bashneft and from the market to gain the 50-plus percent back. Considering the investment in a company as the good investment for us and just reimburse in part the money which Bashneft just spent during the obligatory offering to the minorities. That was the reason and how we did
it. Really sorry, but that doesn't quite answer my question. So why I do understand that your stake has been diluted and you wanted to increase your stake back to over 50%. But why? What was the reasoning behind buying shares from the market and reducing the stake? Because you could have simply bought all of those $300 million worth of shares either from Bashneft itself or from Sistema Invest. Or could you perhaps share with us who you bought the shares from?
Well, the reason, as I said, first, we're just considering all kind of investment in the shares of the company as a good investment, and the other reason was not to buy all the shares from Bashneft only, just to keep the market conditions in each transaction between us and the company. And the company still kept the part of the shares as the treasury shares, and keep it as currency for the development they would get that would have had in would have been in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Igor Semenov from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Semenov. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. You good.
Go ahead. Yeah, hi. Yeah, so just a couple of questions. First of all, on the dividend, can you maybe provide a bit more comment on, just how substantially you want to increase the payout? And a second question on your M&A pipeline, can you just give a bit more color on how a Dutch or European oil products trader fits into your strategy, you know, what's driving your interest in this particular company? Is it geographic diversification, or you know, and why also why is it done at Sistema level rather than, for example, Bashneft level? Thank you.
Thank you, Igor. On the dividend, I said earlier in previous discussions and previous conference calls that our sort of conceptual model of Sistema that we have in mind is to have sort of dividends at around 30% level of net income, which is kind of three times increase from the current level. This is not to say that this is what we're going to be recommending to the board right now, but we certainly want to progressively increase dividends year after year. And not only we're looking to increase dividends, but we're also looking to increase dividend yield on our stock. And so we'll be recommending a first step in this direction to the board of Sistema pretty soon. I would probably refrain from giving you a specific number, but it will be a substantial increase from the current levels.
Mm-hmm.
And on the oil trader, we have not decided yet that the acquisition will be done. If the acquisition is done, that it will be done on Sistema. I think this is still an open issue because there is definitely a synergy between Bashneft and the oil trader. But again, there is also a piece of developing this oil trader into a separate business. So the due diligence is not over yet. We're still in the process of answering a number of questions for ourselves about this transaction. So we have signed non-binding documents. The decision is not finally made. And I think we'll come back to this topic sort of by the end of the year, or perhaps early next year, to finalize our point of view and answer, you know, many of the questions that many of you will definitely have about this potential transaction.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a question from Ivan Kim from BTB Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions, please. On Indian operations, so basically in case you regain the licenses there, do you plan to keep operations in all of Indian circles, or you probably want to focus on several regions, and also whether we should expect some news flow and what's the timing of the news flow on that? And secondly, on the capital increase approved by EGM, so basically we understand that there is a possibility of secondary offering. I'm just curious, what are the conditions for that follow-on to happen, and whether you can finance all the deals in the pipeline, and namely SG Trans, Argus, and Verafarm, for which we get the approval from anti-monopoly, whether you can basically finance these deals with debt and just from cash you have on the balance sheet. Thank you.
Okay. I'm not sure I got all of your questions, but let me start with what I understood, and then you'll remind me of what I will miss. On India, as you know, we have curative petition pending in the court, and I think at this point we're just waiting for this decision to be made, and I would refrain from detailed comments as to what is going to happen once we get this curative petition license, because you know we don't know exactly whether we're going to get it, at which point we're going to get it, and the whole situation is pretty complex, as you might imagine, given the fact that we refused to participate in the auctions, and the auctions have been widely criticized and presented by the press as basically completely unsuccessful. And as soon as we know what the decision on the curative petition is, we'll come out and we'll present a new Indian strategy. And I would leave it at that at this point. I can tell you one thing, that we do not plan any substantial investments into India, and we're planning to reduce our exposure dramatically as compared to what it was last year and the year before, whatever our plan is. And the second question was what?
Ivan, can you repeat the second question?
Yes, definitely. So basically, the EGM approved of the increase in the basic capital by 4%, and also you asked for the authorities to increase the GDR limit from 19% to about 25%. So basically, I understand that there is a possibility of a secondary offering. I wanted to ask, what are the conditions for this offering to happen, and whether you have enough debt funding capacity and own sort of internal generated funds to finance the deals that are currently in the pipeline, Argus Group, Verifarm, and SG Trans. Thank you.
Yeah, we, first of all, I should say that no decision to make a secondary placement was made at this point. So we don't have a decision to make a secondary placement. We only wanted to create an opportunity to do so if we decide to. And I wouldn't go into the details as to what the criteria will be, but evidently the share price would have to be much higher than it is today. Much higher, because we believe that at those price levels where we stand right now, we still have a significant discount. This discount is not justified, and this is not a level attractive for us to be raising financing by equity infusion. And as far as debt capacity is concerned, I think we have enough debt and enough money on our balance sheet to execute the transactions that we currently have on the table. But of course, you know, I said it before, we have quite an extensive deal plot pipeline, and there are many things that we have not announced and people don't know about them. So, you know, potentially next year we might have deals for which we might need capital, and how we're going to finance those deals remains to be a question. We want to keep options open. Obviously, we understand that the equity capital is more expensive than debt. And, you know, we'll be making our decision depending on what's going to happen with those transactions, because we have a policy of attracting partners. And if you look at SG Trans, for instance, which I'm sure we're going to discuss further on in the call, we do have a partner in this deal. And out of the whole $700 million amount, you know, including the leverage that we're planning to bring into the deal, our cash exposure will not exceed 150 to 200 million, which is, you know, a completely different exposure than 700, as you might imagine. So basically, we are trying to attract other people's capital and sort of trying to become a lot more like private equity by doing so. Because this is a financing which we don't guarantee ourselves, and it doesn't cost us anything. This is a partner financing for which we just share the value that we can potentially create. So we do have a long pipeline of deals, and we do have a lot of flexibility to execute them. So we just want to kind of stay flexible at this point.
Thank you very much.
First question was about what? There was a third question also.
No, well, I think you basically answered all the questions with regards to, you know, financing and possible SPO. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question comes from Alex Kazbegi from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. A couple of questions on transportation sector. I mean, generally, wondering if you can share with us some benchmarks. How would you look for, so to say, future possible acquisitions? Let's say there was an information about the TransContainer participation. Would you look at this as a, so to say, on an EBITDA basis, on per rail car acquisition? What's going to be the main, so to say, criteria so we can better assess, so to say, how much you prepared, so to say, to spend on those acquisitions? Second, related to that also, since you mentioned about the SG Trans, and since you mentioned now that it's probably you will be bringing, I guess, another partner, if you could maybe give us a bit more color again how exactly we should look at this acquisition, where do you see, so to say, improvement of the financials, how do you plan to run it, and again, if you could disclose, of course, who is the partner or what will be the synergetic impact on that, would be also great. And the last one, just to follow up on this Argos acquisition, I mean, I understand that, of course, it's still very much, so to say, undecided, but just to understand again the rationale in terms of the, does it fit, so to say, you looked at this asset because it fits into the Bashneft strategy and that's why you looked at it, or you looked at it on a standalone basis as a financial investment where you found that possibly you can also leverage off some of the Bashneft's, so to say, ability to sell the oil into that company. So basically, is it for Bashneft mostly, or is it, so to say, looked up on a, so to say, on its own basis? Thank you.
Alex, thank you for your questions on SG Trans. Just to remind you, we started this story by creating a small company with a group of private investors on the basis of an asset which at the time was called Financial Alliance. And I think at this point we already rebranded it into Unirail, but I'm not sure. So it's a financial alliance. Let's call it this for this time. In this financial alliance, we invested I think 5,000 wagons from Bashneft, and Financial Alliance matched with another 5,000 wagons, and I think we took another 5,000 or 6,000 wagons as a lease arrangement. So we started with a fairly small operation, and now with the acquisition of SG Trans, we will combine it in one company, which will have approximately 32,000 rail cars altogether, and we will still maintain the 50-50. A partnership in this larger company with a group of private investors. And they invest in this business dollar to dollar with us. So basically we don't finance them, they invest their own private money. And it's basically a joint venture. And a group of private investors that we're working with are people who are quite professional in rail operations, and we rely on them to actually run this business efficiently. And we were able to put together a very capable management team, which we believe can operate this business successfully and drive value. So, but this is sort of the first step. Now, the way we look at the industry, we understand that it's quite fragmented at this point, and there is one, you know, large player, which is the first rail company, with around 200,000 rail cars, and the second in size company is Global Trans, which is a public company with around 90,000 cars. And then there are smaller and smaller and smaller players. And, of course, then there is also a potential forthcoming privatization of the second rail company, which is another 100,000 cars that currently belongs to Russian railroads, and potential kind of spin-offs and outsourcing of rail operations of large industrial players, such as MMK Trans, Evras Trans, you know, whatever other trans exist in the market. Our view is that the market will be comprised of 3 to 4 kind of large operators, 150, 200,000 cars each. And our vision is to become one of those. And exactly how to get there, there are multiple kind of ways, which it's very difficult to specify right now to say, you know, we're going to acquire this company and then acquire that company and then combine this and combine that, because it's you know, it's kind of crossroads with many potential kind of outcomes, and we'll only know once we get there. But the intention is there, and we understand that right now we can acquire those assets at reasonable valuations, given that most of them are overloaded with debt, and because of it they have very little flexibility to actually grow, and you know we can be a very efficient consolidator. Exactly how much money we're going to invest in this, you know, remains to be seen. I would say, you know, up to $1 billion is something that we can easily afford and is strategically feasible. But this is kind of a number off the top of my head. I mean, I would not make it as a commitment, but this is something which we believe is absolutely feasible. And the reason I personally like this industry is because it's kind of bricks and mortar. Russia cannot survive without railroads. Russia will continue to transport things, and the volume of transportation is only going to increase. And you don't have that many players, and the barriers to entry, given the size and the scale, are going to be pretty high. So I believe it's a pretty attractive investment story for us, and I can say that this story can become as much as a so-called, you know, third leg of Sistema that we discussed several times. It might not, but it also might. I mean, this is one area in which we see how we can strategically build this kind of a third leg. And I would not, you know, want to give you a lot of detail about exactly what kind of multiples, what kind of assets we're going to be paying, but of course, everything we do with economic models and financial feasibility in mind. And I can assure you that the acquisition of SG Trans, even though it may seem on the expensive side to some people, is very well calculated, and we're absolutely confident we're going to make our money back on this transaction with the required rate of return. We have no doubts about the outcome. And we will be disclosing more on SG Trans once we actually sign the agreement and enter into the ownership of the company, because it would be kind of strange for us to be disclosing information about the asset that we don't yet own and we haven't yet paid for. But let me assure you, this is a transaction which we analyzed and sort of researched very well. As far as Argus transaction is concerned, I mean, this is still a case in discussion inside of Sistema, and there are several points of view on this, and we're still debating. It's not finalized. You know, we have an intention, but it's not finalized. And basically, the discussion is very simple. On one hand, you do have a very successful and efficient trader in Northern and Western Europe. And it is clear that the refining capacity in Europe is going to be going down because of tax reasons, ecology reasons, and so on and so forth. And Europe will be receiving more and more imports from the rest of the world. And in Russia, it is also evident that with all the renovation projects in all the refineries, you know, starting with Rosneft and also others, at some point there will be a profit of diesel and gasoline. So the exports from Russia of refined products will increase. So in that regard, it actually does make a lot of sense, and there is a synergy of having a distribution base in Europe to which we can supply our products and distribute it effectively. And there is also a synergy in building a logistic link between Bashneft here and Rotterdam there to actually deliver the goods in an efficient way, because right now we're paying quite a bit of margin to outside players who are actually doing that for us, because we don't have our own logistic and transportation chain established. So there is a clear mathematically calculated synergy that we're looking at. So that's one kind of set of questions, and that is one of the reasons for why we may consider actually buying it on Bashneft, as a natural continuation of the flow of product and the way to make money for Bashneft. On the other hand, we could look at that as a platform to expand the trading operation beyond a distribution in Europe and into sort of a global commodity trading with oil and, you know, perhaps Titova coming online and potentially some other investments in the oil fields that we're doing abroad, Iraq, and you know other things, other places. And this is a different kind of strategy, a strategy of an independent operator. And we're currently debating how sustainable the strategy is and how realistic it is to actually pursue this strategy. How executable is the strategy? And if we believe that this is a good strategy and we can execute on it, then it's an argument for why it should be on Systema and not on Bashnia. So that's kind of two sets of arguments that we're debating. And, you know, once we make our decision, which will, you know, may take another month or two, and also the due diligence, you know, is going to help to understand better the insights of the business and sort of the expertise which is there, then we'll be more sort of open to discuss it. But right now the situation is exactly as I described it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Can I ask you one clarification question on your first sort of say answer? So to become consolidated in the industry, would that be just the acquisitions with the necessity of having ultimately a control in whatever it's going to be? Or would you consider the, so to say, the merger route as well, and which would be more probably fitting in your private equity strategy, ending up, so to say, in a large company but not necessarily with a controlling stake?
Control is not a prerequisite. I mean, we already have 50-50, so in fact we don't have control. We don't have a single-handed control, so let's put it this way. So control is not a prerequisite, but we need to have an arrangement which will you know, give us a good exit option and a good value creation option for the investment that we make. So we don't want to be just a minority partner with no rights that, you know, will be basically sitting asset forever and, you know, write on the piece of paper how our NAV is improving without ever being able to monetize it.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ivan Krumushin from Gazprom Bank. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good evening. Thank you very much for the presentation. I have questions mostly related to the oil business development. The first question is, what are your medium-term goals and priorities of oil business development? And the second is related to your revenue base. Whether should we expect interim dividends from the largest companies in your portfolio, Bashneft and MTS, in the next 1-2 years? And the third question is, do you plan to continue buying treasury shares from Bashneft or from the market, or you have already completed purchases and accumulated direct 50% stake in Bashneft? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The medium goals for Bashneft. Bashneft, as a company itself, has a pretty robust strategy of organic growth, mostly, plus some potential M&As, but nothing dramatic in the approved strategy. And this strategy envisages further growth, both of top line and EBITDA, and even an increase in the EBITDA margin by improving the efficiency of the refineries, by going into the gas segment in Bashkiria, by expanding TREPS in Titova, and by potentially developing further refining into the potential petrochemical area in the plants of Bashnia. So this strategy, which we are planning to approve this year, we're satisfied with, and we believe that this strategy will give us the return on investment that we need on our Bashneft asset, which, you know, should be in excess of 12% in terms of total shareholder return a year. And we believe that this is feasible, and we're quite satisfied with that. What sort of dividends we should expect from largest investments in our portfolio? We expect to increase dividends from MTS for sure, and we have an intention to do that because we believe that MTS, with its current strong cash flow, can afford to pay more dividends without damaging the strategy of the company. and we're planning to look at this very, very carefully. Bashneft, we don't have any immediate dividend expansion plans given given the capital requirement for Treps and Titova and also improvements in new construction in the refining plants. But we believe that Bashneft can definitely keep up the current level of dividends without without any difficulty. And as far as share purchases of Bashneft, I think at this point we have completed them, and we don't really, we don't have an immediate intention to do anything else in this regard.
Let me clarify. About dividends, I asked whether we should expect some interim dividends or will we have only annual dividends?
No interim dividends, no. Annual dividends so far.
Okay. And on Bashneft, whether you have already accumulated direct 50% stake in Bashneft Capital?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Alexandra Vangranovich from Octa Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, good evening. My question also relates to your M&A strategy, but not on the acquisition side, but probably on the exit side. So you have assets like Sistema Mass Media, like Metsi, and last year there were a lot of questions that you can probably partly exit from these assets. And I just want to get an update on what's happening there, whether you still plan to attract some partner to your Metsi assets. Are you satisfied with Sistema Mass Media strategy and how the company is executing on it? And what are your upcoming plans for these two assets? Thank you.
On Sistema Mass Media in particular, Sistema Mass Media this year is going to be in the green, so it will be profitable on both EBITDA and net profit basis, I believe. It's going to be a small profit, but nevertheless, it will be profit and not a loss. On the scale of Sistema, this business is not visible. It's very, very small. And, you know, we keep it basically as an opportunity play because they have some interesting ideas in the digital distribution and the content aggregation, and they fit quite well with the MTS and MGTS plans for expansion in the data segment. So we don't have an immediate urge to sell, and also the kind of cash that we can make by selling this asset is not dramatically large or even noticeable on the Sistema kind of size, but it creates some interesting options. So at this point, we're not really considering a sale. It's not really costing us anything. So we'll just see for another 12 months where this goes, and if it kind of takes off, then it takes off. If it doesn't take off, then perhaps in the next 12 months, we'll come back to the idea of disposing of this particular asset. With Metsi, the situation is different. Metsi, we believe, has a very good potential and good strategy also to expand in the private medical business arena in Russia, which is pretty empty at this point, and demand is dramatic. We were able to attract a new or improved management team. We employed a gentleman by the name of Khavar Mann, who used to be head of medical practice in APOX, and he brought a number of individuals, professionals in hospital management and medical business management from Europe and the U.S., and this team is currently working on building essentially a new strategy, which we're planning to approve in December. And once that improved, I think we will embark on a dramatic kind of change program and expansion program in Metsi. We're also planning to attract a 25% sort of stake partner into Metsi, and we're continuing a number of negotiations with the funds, and the funds are waiting for new management or improved management and new strategy to be in place before they come in and pay up the check. But I think we'll get there definitely sometime next year, and you know, METSI we believe could be an extremely interesting investment idea to create value in Russia.
Thank you. This was very helpful.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Vyacheslav Shilin from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Just a couple of questions from me, please. Regarding the financial impact from the SSTL, could you please clarify whether we should expect any additional negative charges on your P&L in next quarter in 2013? And maybe on a slightly bigger scale, if you decide to fully exit your investment in India, what would be the impact on the balance sheet generally if it was to happen at all? This is my first question, and then I'll ask my other one.
The second question with the impact on the balance sheet, I believe that the overall kind of outstanding debt, which we already partially picked up on Sistema, in total was around 1.5, 1.7 billion. And that's pretty much the extent of exposure. I think Alexey Buyanov will give you more details on this.
Yeah, and well, about the influence and further write-offs, we should say that in accordance with USGAAP requirements, we perform the impairment test based on the recent developments in India, and there is still uncertainty regarding the situation, and we took probability-weighted approach based on possible scenarios, and the result was conducted in 213 million write-off. But all in all, as of today, we have about 800 million of assets on our balance sheet in India, of which potentially we may write off 60 million in case of unfavorable scenario. 600 million in case of unfavorable scenario. And that's additional influence which could be as an outcome of our situation in India. As concerning that, Mikhail just mentioned that the worst case scenario that the whole debt which guaranteed by Sistema would be to us. That's it.
But and this debt, is it going if you exit the investment, does this debt become immediately repayable, or there is no such sort of risk?
No, it does not become immediately repayable, of course. In fact, it improves our financial position because we reduced the interest rate by half almost.
And we were able just to manage this all this year, the whole year since the unpleasant events took place in February. And at the moment, we're confident that we would be okay with the lenders furthermore.
And whether relating to this potential debt repayments or not, does Sistema have any existing committed credit lines from any of the domestic or international banks, and for what amount? You know that.
Yes, we do have, and the credit lines is somewhere around 500 million.
And are they available or utilized?
Available.
Okay, thank you. And the other question I had is, would you be able to give us any guidance for the consolidated and also just the holdco leverage for 2012 year-end? Where do you see that trending?
This is not in our policy just to provide the forecast. We just announced that the changes could come from the India side, where we announced that we would shift some of this debt to us, and that would be the main influence the position of all the corporate centers.
Maybe I could ask it in another way. Do you plan to raise new debt, be it a bank loans or bonds, in the next 3 to 6 months, based on your, you know, whatever was made public in terms of your plans, in terms of the existing debt refinancing profile? Do you plan any debt raising?
Well, subject to a lot of preconditions.
No, we don't have any immediate plans to raise any debt that we can announce. You know, if we have to, for whatever reason, we'll go and raise it. But nothing immediate that we have in the schedule.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was helpful.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Galkin from BTB. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I wanted to confirm that you just previously said that your eventual total cash outflow related to SG Trans acquisition will only be about 150 and 200 million, and that will be because funding will come from your partner as well as your as well as the company's own balance sheet. And the second statement I wanted to double check is that you said that in India you're not intending to actually increase exposure and commit more resources apart from your current exposure. I mean, meaning that you basically dismissed the rumors that you're going to buy other companies in that country. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is absolutely correct. The current plan is to have an SG Trans exposure of around 150 to 200 million. The way the transaction would happen is that we would first buy it onto Sistema, so we would pay the whole amount of 700 million, and then we would sell part of it to our partner. Of course, you know, that's an intention of the partner. The partner might turn back and say, "We're not going to do it," and then, you know, but the current plan is, you know, like this.
Of course.
As I tell you, the partner will pick it up, and then we will bring in the debt, because the company currently is debt-free. In fact, it has 1 billion rubles of cash on balance sheet, I believe, or something like this. So basically, it will be a reasonably leveraged transaction, so the total leverage of our combined rail operation will not exceed 2.5 times debt to EBITDA, which is a perfectly comfortable level, and we'll end up with 150 to 200 million of cash outflow in this particular transaction. That's the intention that we're planning to execute. And as far as increased exposure in India, no, we don't have any immediate plans to increase exposure in India. Yes, we have been looking and we have been discussing with many partners in India, with many potential situations and deal partners, all kinds of scenarios, and that's why you see leaks in the press and people commenting that we're looking at Aircel, we're looking at this, we're looking at that, but nothing is in the making, nothing has been negotiated or done as a deal, and we're basically exploring all kinds of opportunities because, you know, the Indian market, we've been there for four years, and, you know, we know this market probably better than anyone else, and we don't want to just kind of give up and go. We want to explore every opportunity that is out there, including, by the way, the opportunity to pursue our case in court in case we don't get the curative petition granted.
Okay. And my question is actually on your debt appetite at the holdco level, and also your kind of net cash, net debt position disclosures, because those are somewhat confusing. First, because you, in the third quarter, you apparently received almost $1 billion of dividends, and your cash position almost didn't change. I mean, it increased 150 million. So it would be helpful if you actually provide the list of outflows. And also, I understand that this is some long-term deposit movements, you know, up or down, which are somewhat confusing. So it would be actually good if you also make additional disclosure on the amount of your long-term deposits, because those are also quasi-cash and would be helpful. So, but the real question is, what is your debt appetite in terms of at the holdco level say, versus your expected annual dividend inflow? Because your debt appetite on the consolidated level is really of little relevance to your creditors, and I'm certain many bondholders will subscribe to this view. I think what you should be saying is how much debt are you ready to take at the holdco level, including these 1.5, 1.6 billion guarantees at the holding company. What would be the highest level you're ready to go? Is it $4 billion, is it, or three, you know, four times the dividend flow? Is it three times the dividend flow? Thank you.
Our position has been to basically maintain negative net debt, or whatever you call it, basically maintain a positive cash position at the Sistema level. So to have more cash than we have debt on the Sistema level, not to attract debt onto Sistema level using the consolidated balance sheet of the group. That's been our position because, you know, we don't want to be carrying a lot of debt for the benefit of our kind of daughter companies. The scenario in which we might attract debt onto Sistema level is when we do some kind of a leverage buyout. When we buy an asset, we raise debt onto Sistema, and then we transfer the debt on the asset that we bought. This scenario is possible, but we don't want to have a scenario where we have debt three times the dividends or four times the dividends. That's simply not our model. We'd rather attract partner money and be more like a private equity than a company heavily loaded with debt. That is the idea.
Okay. Okay. And sorry, if I may, I understand I'm abusing the time, but in this regard, the Freight One bid, which you still are chasing, I mean, in that case, if assuming that you're allowed to buy this 25% stake for, say, $60 billion, you would not be able to move that debt onto Freight One balance sheet, I assume. How does that play into this, what we've just said, and what you just, you know, overall view and strategy towards this bid?
Well, I can tell you a few things on this one. Number one, we believe that the true value of the stake is much higher than the asking price. So there is a lot of value to be made in this particular investment, number one. And we do have some knowledge that the market doesn't have, but I can assure you that this is the fact. This is number one. Number two, of course, we would not enter into this transaction unless we have all the risks well analyzed, understood, and hedged. And if we are to enter in this, we would have an exit in mind, which would be reasonably quick and reasonably profitable for us. So if we are to take this risk, we would be able to get a very attractive return on the risk that we are taking. So it's a very I cannot give you a lot of details on this transaction, but it's. But it's a very well-calculated financial investment, and of course we will not go into this if we are at all. We will not go into this alone. We will have a partner who will basically do this with us. And the potential exit. Well, one of the simplest potential exits is an IPO. But there are also several other scenarios which we have been considering when we went for this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ilya Rachinkov from Investor Cafe. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. I would like to ask a question on possible Bashneft IPO. Are you going to participate in it as a selling shareholder, or could we expect some other scheme of your participation? And the part of this question is that could we expect the funds attracted during the possible IPO to be paid as dividends in, for example, 2013 or 2014? Thank you.
We don't plan on a Bashneft IPO at this point. Simple as that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Anton Fedotov from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the presentation. My question is to follow up on your comments about increasing dividends from MTS. Do you have in mind any target payout ratio that you would like to reach with MTS dividends?
Well, MTS announced its dividend policy recently, and there is not that much to add to this. You know, I can say that if MTS has been paying around $1 billion on average over the last few years, I think it's completely feasible to raise it to maybe $1.5 billion or something. But we'll see. You know, given the results of 2012, and you know, once we come in 2013, what's going to happen with the market, with the ruble rate, you know, competition. But clearly, there is room for increase. I don't want to give you any guidance, but it's not doubling up the dividends, but it's a fairly substantial increase.
Did you mention 1.5 or 2.5? I'm sorry.
1.5.
1.5. Thank you very much. And I have a second question. Do you have any plans to launch a new buyback program, given that the share price of Sistema is currently at quite a low level, and as you mentioned, the discount to the sum of the parts is quite significant?
We apologize for the pause in your presentation. Please stay online. Your conference will commence shortly. Once again, we apologize for the pause in your presentation. It will commence very shortly. Please stay on the line.
Hi, sorry everyone, we got disconnected.
Should I repeat my question?
Yes, you got disconnected. Can you just repeat your question, please?
Yes, of course. So my second question was, are you planning to launch any new buyback program, given that the current share price of Sistema is quite low, and as you mentioned, there is quite a significant discount to the sum of the parts?
It's tempting. We haven't made a decision yet, but we're definitely looking at the stock price. Again, the logic of the last buyback was to invest our money in our own stock because we believe the price was very attractive and the discount is not justified. So I would not exclude, but the decision has not been made yet.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Your final question comes from Anna Kabatova from BCS. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my questions. First about Rosneft. You made this investment two years ago, maybe three, and do you still stick to this investment? Because as far as you have a long acquisition list, don't you think that it could be reasonable to divest your stake in this company and to use proceeds for new acquisitions? Because we hear no news from Rosneft side for a quite long period of time. Thank you.
We do not exclude any sale of any asset that we own if the price is right and if the opportunity is there. So there is no immediate intention or decision to sell our stake in Rosneft. We'll have to see what happens with our deal pipeline and the deal execution, and we'll have to see what happens with Rosneft and Bashneft and potential partners in both. So it just remains to be seen. I would not exclude this as a possibility, but I would not say we have a definitive plan to execute on it. We understand absolutely well that we do have good value locked up in our stake in Rosneft, which we don't see right now in our market cap. So we know that, we remember that, and we'll use it when the time comes.
Thank you. And my second question is about your new structure. Well, this eight new units, yeah. Could you describe with and explain the idea, what was behind, again, the new organizational structure? What was wrong with that structure, the previous one, with the base and developing assets? Also, technical question, are you going from the next quarter on, maybe from the first quarter 2013, to report your segment information also according to the new structure? Let's say we now have two pillars of your business, and we will switch to eight. Thank you.
The logic is very simple. It's not the pillars of the business. It's the investment portfolios, and we basically treat our assets of the companies that we own as basically assets or piles of money invested into particular assets. And in each portfolio, within each portfolio, we are looking for a certain return on the investment that we make. As simple as that. So we don't treat MTS or Kvashneft as a company that we need to manage and operate. We treat it as an amount of money invested, of our capital, that we need to generate sufficient return. And the task of a particular portfolio manager is to develop a strategy and bring the management capable of executing the strategy to make sure we get the return that we want on a particular asset. If we don't get the return and we can't fix the management, or the industry structure does not permit us to generate the return that we want, then we would dispose of an asset and reinvest our money in other assets. It's basically very much similar to how private equity companies do that. And that's why we structured our existing assets and also new projects and new investments into those eight portfolios and eight individuals who run respective teams, who are basically combining the expertise of now looking over the existing investments and also making new investments. And the way we divide up the capital between the portfolios is more or less on the competitive basis, and there is an investment committee that makes investment decisions inside of Sistema after proper due diligence and financial analysis. And the goal of the whole setup is to deliver a return on capital at or exceeding the level of the cost of capital of Sistema itself.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. What I see basically is that you are back to industry-based organization that you had before shifting to investment business model. But anyway, okay. And my last question, if you could give any kind of answer, what are your plans in regard to treasury shares? You have around 4% currently on your balance. Is it possible that you might use some part of this treasury stock in your future deal, as far as you have partners in different business segments?
Currently, we hold them. Currently, no exact answer to your question. We were holding them. No decision has been made yet.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was your final question. Please continue with any further points you wish to raise, sir.
Thank you. I think we're ready to conclude this call. Thank you, everyone, for joining, and have a very good day.
Thank you. That concludes the Sistema Third Quarter 2012 Financial Results Conference Call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.